Welcome back. It's another day, another dollar, another fantasy sports podcast here at Trust the Gut. It's Clement Uduk doing a post-NFL draft podcast, and I'd like to invite my good friend from high school, Joe Simone. Welcome to the show. What have you got to say? How you been? What you doing, man?
My favorite event, the NFL draft. Absolutely my favorite thing. So much promise for the next season. So many opportunities to see guys who are going to come out, and you know, it really changes the whole balance of the sport, but also of fantasy football. So we want to, let's get down to brass tacks, baby.
Brass tacks. Joe, spend a couple of seconds, maybe, you know, as long as you want, just talking about your sports portfolio, where you divvy your time, who you follow, who you like, who you don't like, what gets your blood pumping and your blood boiling about sports and fantasy sports.
Yeah, so Clement said that, to the listeners out there, that we've gone to high school together, and actually in high school I covered the draft for the school paper, did mock drafts, and it was a great time. And I followed every single year. I'm a diehard Philadelphia Eagles fan. Before Chip Kelly got there, to all you Oregon fans who just hopped on the bandwagon, I'm a big Eagles fan. Have been since 1998.
Wow, that's a ways.
I've been through the grinder. Just before Donovan McNabb was drafted that following year in 1999. So I've seen a lot of heartbreak, cried when we've lost NFC Championship games, the Super Bowl in 05. So believe me, I'm a diehard fan who stays with my team through thick and thin. But that said, I love the game of football, and I especially love the opportunity. Like the kids who come out into the draft and become actual NFL players, it's interesting, just that process in general. And I just love the whole meritocracy of it, where you have guys like Jameis Winston who are going to be the starter for Tampa Bay and probably going to be starter for Tampa Bay for quite some time. He has the talent. But you never know who's going to step up, and as everyone talks about every year, who's gonna be the next Tom Brady.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, going off of that thing, do you think there are very many players that were in this draft class that have that Tom Brady-esque vibe to them, that they take shine away from somebody else that's been getting all the press?
You know, it'll be interesting. I think that when you look at the where quarterbacks went, especially if we're going to talk quarterbacks, you have Winston and Mariota top two, and then you fall down to Bryce Petty in the third round. Bryce Petty, he could be very good. He comes from a zone read offense, just like Mariota does at Baylor. He has difficulty throwing deep balls, and guys after him, you know, Mannion, other guys, you just know, you don't know. Mannion in a weird situation in St. Louis, who he's got a great coach in, you know, Fisher. He's got a great supporting cast now, Todd Gurley as well. And you think Nick Foles, the guy to start, you never know what's going to happen in those situations. So, yeah, there could be those guys down the road. There's definitely some good undrafted signees, but yeah, for right now, it looks like Winston's probably ahead of the pack. I don't like that Mariota went to Tennessee Titans. Very bad, just not a very good situation there for a young quarterback who hasn't had very much experience in a pro-style offense. Not the best system to walk into there.
No, not at all, especially with that O-line that pretty much led Jake Locker to retirement and Zach Mettenberger to a, I want to say like a really... I think it was like a separated shoulder or something like that, something in the AC joint that cost him the last game or two of the season, which ended up leading them to the number two pick. So here we are. We're going to talk about some fantasy football, some, you know, rookies and drafts and places you want to go, places you want to look at. Something that we're going to be focusing on here at Trust the Gut for certain is we'll be focusing on year-long leagues as well as daily fantasy leagues. As we get closer into the season, you know, week one, we'll figure out the scheduling of how we do the shows and everything, but that's certainly going to be the focus. Joe and I have been playing in a fantasy football league with a couple of our other high school friends for, I think it's going to be about 10 years coming up this season or something like that. So, yeah. You know, we'll be focusing mostly on season-long leagues with an eye on the ever-popular, now almost exclusively, in some places, exclusively played daily fantasy. So, with that said, Joe, one player, one situation, what has you hyped for this upcoming season?
I'm starting to think I might actually get an Amari Cooper jersey because I think he's going to dominate. He's going to dominate the AFC West. He's everything that you want in a receiver coming out into his first season. I mean, he's so polished with his route running. He has incredibly soft hands. Like, he will fight to get the ball. He reaches out to get the ball. He doesn't let the ball come into him. His routes are really crisp. He's not afraid to go over the middle into traffic, which is something that a lot of guys obviously are very scared to, especially, you know, new guys coming into the league. And he caught 124 balls, I think, for Alabama last year. I mean, he's a surefire pick. The other part of it is not just having Derek Carr. The biggest part of that is that's a somewhat put together offensive line. Could be a little bit better, but did a very good job protecting a young quarterback last year. But the biggest thing is James Jones, playing opposite of a veteran receiver who's played with the Packers, had a very good season last year with the Raiders. And then they have other weapons. Andre Holmes, I'd like to see what they do really with the running back situation there. I don't think Murray's going to be able to carry 100% of the load, which definitely will dictate how much they can really pass down the field. But the thing about Cooper is that he can really do every single route you want him to. He doesn't have the flashy combine speed that Kevin White did, which is what put him, which a lot of people are putting Kevin White above Amari Cooper for that reason alone. And that's a stupid reason, because Cooper does everything that's just indicative of a starting number one receiver. Hard to compare him because he's coming in and he's got muscle to him. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of guys do, which I like. I like his possession skills a la Jeremy Maclin, but he's kind of beefier and he's also a little bit quicker.
That's always been an interesting thing for me. I've never really been a fan of the NFL draft per se. Like, it's just not something that I get hyped up for. If I'm talking about a draft, I like following it's the NBA draft. Mostly because basketball is like a sport that I'm really into, and I can follow that one a little bit easier. And never played any football, so I don't really know the intangibles and the tangibles and the intangibles that need to be measured. However, having said all that, something that I've been noticing the last couple of seasons, especially with following a guy like Michael Salfino, who writes for Wall Street Journal and Yahoo, he likes to focus on tallish receivers that are like 6'2", 6'3". They've got big hands, so they're like, not only do they have a pretty intense catch radius, but their hands are able to like just be stick them to the ball, and they're fast. So would Amari Cooper kind of fit into that mold of a prototypical big receiver that's got some speed to him and decent sized hands to make an impact?
At 6'1", he's 6'1", 202 pounds. He's a guy who's going to beat, if for example, if they play, I think they play the Seahawks this year. I think the NFC West matches up with the AFC West. I could be wrong. But the thing about it is that when he's going to be matching up against a guy like Richard Sherman, you know, and the Legion of Boom, and basically their MO is press. They basically get up to the line, press the receiver, and then get back into zone. So they drop back and they don't play man-to-man. So what that allows Cooper to do is he can really go with underneath routes. He can really exploit his quickness, his explosiveness, and his polished route running so that he can really come back with button hooks as well. He can go five yards down the field, dig really hard and cut, and really get under and use that, that speed and explosiveness and quickness that he has, where a guy like, say, you know, last year you had Mike Evans, you had Kelvin Benjamin. Those guys are going to go up, and they can match up one-on-one with Richard Sherman. They can go up there because they've got a few inches on him, and that's great. But, you know, you're always going to want a guy who can go underneath routes, who can do things that are really quick, and actually beat a lot of those taller corners, which are becoming the popular thing these days. You see DeSean Jackson? DeSean Jackson kills everybody. And everyone's afraid of DeSean Jackson because he can burn you with his speed.
This is
now,
true.
Cooper doesn't have that incredible speed. There are some guys that do, but it's his finesse. It's more of the he doesn't look like Jerry Rice on paper, but he does this. He came into this draft the same way that Jerry Rice did, which was he's polished himself in the fundamentals. And any guy who does that is going to do very well going forward.
That's great that you mentioned that, because you also mentioned how he can run any route off the tree. And a guy like Kelvin Benjamin, if we're talking about stellar rookies that did well last year, he can't run too many routes off that tree, like, consistently, and to like the pace and the quickness that he needs to make those cuts. Same with a guy like Mike Evans, who's only been playing football since, like, what, junior year of high school or something like that, and he came out after a year or two at Texas A&M. Like, being able to know the nuances of the game instead of just knowing the straight flag route or, you know, like a 10-yard post, that sets you apart. That's like Kawhi Leonard coming in first year with San Antonio and starting – taking over the wing position, and now he's, you know, finals MVP and probably like one of the top three small forwards in the entire NBA. Like, who's a player that you would compare, aside from Jerry Rice, compare Amari Cooper coming into the league as this year? Like, Julio, are we talking like a Julio Jones type season? Are we talking about Dez Bryant maybe? Like, what kind of dominance should we expect? Or what kind of season should we expect from Amari Cooper?
Well, it's still kind of up in the air. I mean, he's the number one option. So in any league, he should be gone in my opinion, the third round, because I know the Raiders are going to be throwing the ball because they don't have a guaranteed home run hitter who's lining up behind Derek Carr. They don't have a running back who can really – I mean, look, Murray did it last year. Murray absolutely killed certain teams with long runs. But – he's not an every down back. There was a lot of other running backs in that mix last year. When Jones-Drew was healthy with McFadden, there's a lot of rotation there. So you still don't know the identity. And you also have to be afraid of the fabled sophomore slump, because Derek Carr could be going through that next year.
Yeah, I totally agree. The Raiders are going to be – I think they'll be a guilty pleasure watch for me next season and everything like that. So I'm really excited to see what they do there. I think for me, my player from the draft, and you mentioned it earlier, was Marcus Mariota, and I don't know. I was super excited to hear that he was coming out, and I was really excited to hear that Tampa Bay, you know, had the first pick, and I really thought that they would go with him, because that team, they've got more offense and. There's more fun there. Like, if you're talking about fantasy football, like, there's just more fantasy goodness and fantasy fun in Tampa Bay than there is in Tennessee. I am now pretty bearish on the prospects of Marcus Mariota, mostly because the offensive line is awful. Their defense isn't any better. It was like one of the, like, it's like in the bottom five of the league in terms of like yardage, staying off the field, and all that jazz. So he'll be on the field a lot, which is good, because he'll have to huck it because they'll be down so much. But still, it's like you worry about the line holding up to hold him upright. Bishop Sankey's really nothing to write home about in his rookie year last year. So.
Yep.
You know, he's more of a plotter than he is one cut and gone. I mean, he couldn't even beat out Sean Green last year. If you can't beat out, if you can't beat out a Sherman tank,
yeah,
like I don't know what else to tell you in terms of your career prospects.
Yeah.
Wideout is an interesting thing for the Titans. I really like Justin Hunter, but I believe Ken Whisenhunt doesn't know how to use him. I also believe that Ken Whisenhunt has like completely lost touch with football in these days. Like, I don't think he's done much to adapt since he left Arizona and he hasn't had Kurt Warner.
Yeah.
Kendall Wright, he can be a home run hitter, but are they going to throw to him and is he going to be able to catch it?
Absolutely.
You don't know.
Everything you said is on point. And, you know, it's not – it's everyone's already going to this and saying, Ken Whisenhunt, what do you think? For me, it's for Tennessee. You're basically now dating yourself, Ken Whisenhunt. You're basically saying, I've got a couple years to make this right or else I'm going to be out like Mike Shanahan in Washington. Because you just picked a number two quarterback. And even though they didn't trade up for it and lose as many picks like Washington did, basically they drafted a number two quarterback without much around him. So you're basically asserting that you're going to have this ship righted before, you know, in at least 3 years. So there's a ton of holes. Marcus is super smart, super dedicated, and will work hard to get at the offense. And he has every single skill. And he's right there, and he's come a long way from his junior to senior year, especially throwing accurately down the field.
That's yeah.
one of the difficult things, and throwing in tight spots, because the Oregon offense, you know, it's very quick. He doesn't really allow things to develop, but I've seen him work on that over time, and going into a couple of the games last year, he's definitely changed a lot of that, and obviously supporting cast helped him at Oregon, but... Yeah, this is a nightmare for him. I'm literally afraid for his life. I'm afraid that he's going to get torn asunder on the field because he's got nothing to help him. He has really no consistent help. And if Doriel Beckham Green is his best help, well, he's the biggest boomer bust of this draft. other than Randy Gregory, but Randy Gregory drafted. I believe a little bit later. So really the end of the day is you really surrounded him with a wide receiver who has said on record that he has bipolar disorder. I believe.
Oh man.
He also pushed a student down the stairs. So he's not a guarantee by any means. Kendall Wright, who is an absolute bust last year in fantasy, doesn't really help anybody. Bishop Sankey, no help at all. So Mariota going to have to learn a whole new offense. And Ken Whisenhunt, good offensive coordinator, probably not a good head coach.
Yeah.
Did really well with Philip Rivers 2 years ago and got Philip Rivers his best season statistically. But that's with a pocket quarterback who had been used to a pro-style offense for many, many years.
I would have to say that Ken Whisenhunt is like – he's like Ben Affleck. He just keeps getting work somehow. I don't really get it. Like,
he's like Norv Turner. Norv Turner was the guy who was the offensive guru, and then he kept getting shots to be head coach, including San Diego. But Norv Turner needs to only be, and he's now just a guy who's known for his offense.
Hey Marcus, we're out here for you in Oregon. If you need people to talk to, shoulders to cry on, we're here out here for you to talk with.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Because I'm sorry, man. I think you're going to be in for a really rough season, especially if JJ Watt comes a knocking two games in a row. And
they have a tough schedule against a lot of defensive players who. A couple of them got drafted this year. He's got to go up against Leonard Williams and the Jets later in the season. He's got to go against the Patriots. They play all of the AFC East, and they also play the NFC East, I believe. Yeah, they play they just play the AFC East, which is a daunting task. Cameron Wake,
oof.
Leonard Williams, as I mentioned, and Ndamukong Suh. I mean, they've got to go. He's got to go up against a lot of big names, and J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney twice.
Ugh, Yeah, I'll be watching with keen eye, but I might have to look away, you know, whenever I hear 99's coming down. So,
yeah.
Yikes. Well, that's good. So we got a couple players out there right now. Is there anybody else or a couple other players that you saw that got drafted that are in good spots or not in good spots that when it comes time to draft in like, you know, mid to late August, that you'll be pretty confident in their abilities as rookies or as second-year players? Because it looked like second-year players, rookies last year, just continued a pretty decent trend of showing up, putting in work, and really taking teams to the top. Odell Beckham Jr. Being like the main poster child for propelling teams late into the season.
Yeah, I think, you know, we'll take a little bit off the beaten path here of skill positions. And how about the Bengals getting Ogbuhi and Jake Fisher, the two offensive linemen? Because to your point, how about Jeremy Hill, who came on last season?
Oh, yeah.
Who was dominant. If Cedric is a known run blocker, the chances are that they're going to put him on the right-hand side. And then you have Jake Fisher coming in on the left-hand side. So watch out for Bengals players next year. I mean, I draft high on Bengals players because they're going to get some serious protection. The Bengals drafted several offensive linemen, and they should be very good next year up front. So healthy rotation means good, solid production from their skill position players. I think they did it. I think they maybe overdrafted with offensive linemen because they definitely need defensive help. But that only means good things for guys like Jeremy Hill, Bernard, A.J. Green. It only means good things for those guys there.
I think the one thing – you mentioned A.J. Green. I think the one thing for A.J. Green, yes, the protection will help him out. It'll also give Andy Dalton more time to throw and find receivers. But I think one thing for A.J. Green is getting over the nagging injuries. Turf toe is an absolute – nightmare to have. I've never had it, but from everything that I've heard of players that have had it or friends of mine that have had it, they say it's just like walking around with you're stubbing your toe every single time you're walking.
Yeah.
And that was the big thing that hurt them late last season, was the fact that A.J. Green had the ankle injury, and then Andy Dalton, who signed that ridiculous contract that I thought was pretty insipid on both parts,
sure,
mostly because he asked for it, and then also because the Bengals were like, oh, that sounds like a great idea, Andy.
Yeah.
He had no help and no protection. We saw it in the Indianapolis game in the, I believe it was a wild card. Like, who was he going to throw to? Like, how was he going to throw to anybody? It also was because A.J. Green wasn't playing, but, you know, he had no time. That Indianapolis pass rush was actually a lot better than it had been for most of the season. Getting offensive line help is definitely a thing that'll help Marvin Lewis's job make Andy Dalton's job easier. And Jeremy Hill is just a bull. I mean, all he does is just basically run downhill, and if he gets those holes in those spaces, we'll be seeing a lot of 100-yard games from him without a question.
Mm-hmm.
I think another player for me that gonna go off the beaten path too. It's not because he had a pretty solid rookie year. He didn't play last year. He plays for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm wondering if you could take a guess at who I'm gonna be mentioning right now.
Mr. Bortles?
No, actually, I'm actually talking about Justin Blackmon. And the only reason I'm bringing up Justin Blackmon is because he has the talent and the measurables to be a Dez Bryant type of player if this is one of the biggest ifs for a player that, you know, you'll hear about, he can get out of his own way in terms of his addiction problems with I believe it may be alcohol and marijuana.
He's definitely alcohol, I remember.
And he was really close to coming back or like getting on the right track, and then I think he either relapsed or got caught with a ticket or something like that. And I don't know where he's at right now, but I think if he's slated to be able to come back, you got to put Justin Blackmon on your watch list, on your short list, on your cheat sheet as a player to make a big impact. Because if he comes back and is anything like he played, I can't believe it's been this long, 2 years ago, think of what that does for Bortles. Think of who doesn't really throw downfield, but that'll open up an easier downfield pass. And it also makes a guy like Marquise Lee, who is probably one of the better possession receivers to come out of college in the last, 5 or 6 years. Think of what that does for him on the field. They don't have anything in the backfield, really. But if they become a gun show, watch out.
Yeah, watch out. I mean, they got T.J. Yeldon in the draft. Good run back, solid starter, probably for them. Or at least rotation. But they don't really have huge depth at that running back position. And then, Blackmon, if he can take care of himself. They added Julius Thomas and...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a big move. Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, now that Bortles... They needed more protection in the draft, to be honest with you. Dante Fowler's sitting there. I think Dante Fowler... I think most of these defensive ends that everybody's been talking about, these hybrid guys, they're really... I feel like most of these guys are boomer or bust. And I thought that, if you really want to take care of Bortles... I thought Brandon Scherff would have been a great pick there. Really mean offensive lineman, but Blackmon, he can do it. He has a talent to be there for Bortles and be there for that team. I think the Jacksonville's still a few steps away from realizing that you've got a really good quarterback in Blake Bortles, and you've got a good talented receiver in Justin Blackmon. You also have a new tight end who's super talented, been to a Super Bowl. Now, can we get some more offensive line help so we can throw them down the ball? And yes, Justin Blackmon needs to take care of himself first. But
I think
he's definitely a dark horse pick. You keep him down there on your bench, and you never know what might happen.
Yeah, that's very true. Another guy, another really good spot. You mentioned him a bit ago, Todd Gurley.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing girly about his game, only in the name.
Yeah.
What do you see happening for that guy? Actually, not only that, what do you see for that entire Rams team? Because they've got something cooking. I don't know what they're going to do at quarterback. They've got something cooking with that offense, and that defense is mean as fuck. Oh my goodness! Like what do you see happening there? How does Todd Gurley get them to either the next step, or what does he do to? Give them another dimension that they didn't have last year.
If he can be healthy, he will be the best running back drafted since Adrian Peterson. You're looking at his tape, his game film, and the things he does. He's a very good blocker, which is one of the things that can set apart a good running back with a great running back.
And not only that, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. It seems to be the number one thing that holds a lot of rookie running backs from getting playing field time is the fact that some of them can't block for shit.
Yeah,
that's like the biggest qualm that a lot of coaches have. It's like, well, I can't trust him in passing downs. Because how do I know he's going to protect the guy? Stuff like that.
That's going to be super important in that NFC West division. Gurley, he runs. It's so hard to describe how he runs because he has the bouncing ability of an Adrian Peterson. I mean, he's no Shady McCoy. He can't turn on a dime. But he has this weird, uncanny ability to turn his hips really quickly and get to that next level. So. He also runs really hard, and he's not scared of being physical at all. And he runs guys over. Like, I don't know how to really describe him, but he's somewhere between Marshawn Lynch and Adrian Peterson as far as skill set. We'll all see where he heads with, injuries obviously going to play a big factor and see where he actually goes with that. But he can make a huge, huge difference to that team. And really kind of be – I think they could be the next Seattle Seahawks because they have the defense set up. Now they have their power running back. I think Nick Foles isn't Russell Wilson. He's not the guy who's going to really win you ball games, but he's that guy who's not going to lose ball games. He can take care of the football. We've seen that. His first year was pretty amazing, an amazing touchdown to interception ratio. And they got a good, they've got some good offensive lineman prospects in the third and fourth rounds. So they're going to be set with a good rotation there with the big boys up front. So it's all kind of depending on. But I don't really like what they have done with wide receiver yet. I feel like Kenny Britt is still on the. I think Kenny Britt's still staying there. Tavon Austin is going to stay there too. But I don't think they have a lot of weapons as far as tight end and wide receiver that are going to be consistent for them and really threaten anybody with the passing game.
Yeah, that's going to be it's going to be a difficult one to handicap because of the fact that. It's boom or bust with Kenny Britt going deep downfield. He's not much of a possession guy. He also is not very good at staying healthy or even, like, not very good at maximizing the skill set and the potential that he has. Like, he's really...
Poor character. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the big issues.
Yeah, and I don't really even know what to expect out of Tavon Austin, you know, year to year, much less, like, what his career... arc is going to go to, or like what it's going to be, and I can't even name any other receiver that they have. Like,
yeah,
I can name mostly like Lance Kendricks, Jared Cook, and then like the 17 other running backs that they have. That's about it.
Trey Mason will be good. Will definitely help out Gurley coming in because they'll be able to really have a good rotation. Trey Mason really came on strong last year. I'm not really sure who's going to be. It's really hard to say who's going to be handling what responsibilities. But Gurley can catch. Gurley can definitely be that third down back. So it'll be weird to see how they fit Trey Mason in there. But they'll definitely will. It just Gurley can do everything, and it's his skills are just so freakishly reminiscent yet different from players that we've seen before and absolutely dominated. But I mean, he's a real opportunity. When you're drafting, I mean, it's really hard to say where to draft him at, but probably third round at latest, I would say.
Wow, you're that bullish on his opportunities right out the gate. Like do you see him taking the starting role out of camp and out of preseason going into week one?
Well, I think that if he can catch the ball and he's really and Jeff Fisher really likes his ability to do that. I think that he sees maybe 60% of the carries and 60% of reps, at least, and then maybe 70%. And I think at third round, when you're drafting running backs, right? We all know that running backs are the most important position because they're so hard to fill as the season wears on. You really need to have those guys. Like, you know, I lucked out in another league last year because I had Jeremy Hill sitting on my bench. Thank God for that.
Yeah.
I got absolutely destroyed in the final. But, because Odell Beckham Jr., right? Killed everybody.
He either helped you or he was like the 17th knife in your back.
Right. 50-50 with him. So, but you need to have that guy on your roster. And Todd Gurley, if he's really coming on strong, and he's in August when they release depth charts, and he's on there, he's probably going to get a lot of carries and going to be really good and be a stud for the Rams.
Very good, very good. Another running back, another new face in a place that has needed some consistency. San Diego Chargers' newest drafted running back, Melvin Gordon, one of the most prodigious rushers in NCAA football history in terms of yardage and also touchdown, or is it just yardage?
Touchdowns, but yardage is probably the biggest
accolade that he has, right?
Yeah.
But Melvin Gordon, do it all back out of Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean...
That's like a no-brainer. Like, I'm glad they made that decision because they haven't had a strong running back since LaDainian Tomlinson left. They tried to get Ryan Matthews to fill that void. His knees couldn't hold up to the challenge. Even he couldn't hold up to the challenge himself. He had, like, one solid season out of four. Mm-hmm. And now he's off to what, Philadelphia? Is that where he's at now?
Gonna back up Marco Murray.
Yeah. And you know, he was, for me, Ryan Matthews was that player that I just couldn't quit. He was my Brokeback Mountain back. like I couldn't say no because he was there and he was available, and like the talent was so immense. And the offense was good, and he could catch, and he could run, and everything was there. But the ability to stay healthy was not there. Sure. Fast forward a couple of years. Brandon Oliver comes on the scene. Last year, he just wallops, I believe it was, the Oakland Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's middling ever since. Donald Brown was there. He had a pretty good couple of weeks. Then he got a concussion, and you never heard of him again. Danny Woodhead. He's like the little engine that could, the Steve Blake of running backs, if you will. But I actually like Danny Woodhead. Steve Blake and I divorced. Yeah. I can't stand the guy. But he like tears his knee.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the first time where I don't know what they're gonna get out of Danny Woodhead. He's gonna be there. And he's going to take, like, third down possessions, maybe. He'll take, like, maybe 20% of the reps. I don't know what's going to happen with Donald Brown, but I see Donald Brown being shifted down to third on the depth chart. Melvin Gordon steps in, takes over from the get-go, I feel. And with his ability to just be a violent runner, he does a pretty good job of bouncing to the outside, finding holes and just bursting through them. He can also catch a little bit. He's perfect for that San Diego Chargers offense. And the one thing that San Diego has missed is that balance between passing and throwing. And,
absolutely.
And with Melvin Gordon there, I think they'll find it easier to keep it all in balance and switch up speeds and change pace so much easier because they have a formidable running back now. They have a ground game that demands attention.
Sure. You know, he's going to be very, very good for them. I think, Phillip Rivers clearly needs it. It's prolific. And, you know, Phillip Rivers has been super underrated last few years.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'd have to agree. I haven't been a massive fan of Phillip Rivers, but you always look at, like, week 6 or 7, and you go, dang, he's having that kind of year right now? And, you know, that's what they're doing.
And you know, he does have some weird quirks, and obviously he's a fiery guy who kind of rubs people the wrong way. But he's a competitor, and he wants to win. And now that he has a solid running game, it's definitely going to be on for the Chargers and making sure that they get to the playoffs this year to at least keep alive the idea of keeping Phillip Rivers. I think they'd be crazy to lose him next year. But as far as Melvin Gordon goes, I thought it was a good pick. I really didn't understand moving up because at 16 you had the Texans who were sitting there. They have Arian Foster. I'm not super scared for them to draft Melvin Gordon there, and I didn't think that the Niners are going to draft Melvin Gordon because of obviously Carlos Hyde coming on. So it didn't really make much sense to me. They didn't really lose much sixth round pick, I believe. So it just kind of, for me, it just didn't make much sense to pick up Melvin Gordon in a trade. But he's going to be really talented for them. I still think that their offense is based off of, you know, large bunch and wide receiver sets. It would be nice for Phillip Rivers to finally have a dominant wide receiver a la Vincent Jackson, because that's the last guy he really had. Say, LaDainian Tomlinson was the last guy he had to really run the ball effectively.
That's true.
Who's been the last guy who's actually come through with him week to week? I mean, Malcolm Floyd injured two years ago. Keenan Allen came on strong 2 years ago. Keenan Allen didn't play very well last year. Guys just in and out, in and out, in and out. He has Antonio Gates, but you got to realize
Antonio Gates like 40. Isn't he like 45?
He ages every year. Contrary to popular belief, Antonio Gates is getting older. Like, he can't do it every single year and be the dominant wide receiver and continue to post up guys. I mean, he's doing it, and he's an amazing athlete. And he's one of my favorite tight ends of all time. But
yeah.
he's not going to be able to do it consistently. So that's the only thing I kind of gripe about with the Melvin Gordon pick. You know, I would have liked to see them move back a little bit, pick up a couple other pieces to really help. You know, running back is very important in this league, and I think that it definitely gets undersold. But that said, you know, they have a lot bigger problems, and coming out of the AFC West, every year it gets a little bit tougher and also gets a little bit more competitive across the board. You know, Chiefs didn't do anything other than pick up Jeremy Maclin and Marcus Peters that was going to make them really stand out. Right. You still have to see how Marcus Peters kind of flushes out after being discharged from Washington last year. You see if that's actually going to work, but they also lose Eric Berry. So you have the Chiefs who are going to be in a different situation this year. Then you have Oakland who's coming on strong. Yep. And then you have Denver that's whittling down. So right now, this you got to strike while the iron's hot for San Diego, and this is the time to actually do that. But I didn't see them add a nasty playmaker or somebody who can really help them really advance to that next stage. I feel like they're helping Phillip Rivers, but not really in the way that they really needed to. And there weren't many great options at wide receiver at that point. I think you have Aguilar and you have maybe Philip Dorsett. I'm not big on Brashad Perryman, but I think it's a good pick. It's a solid pick. You can't go wrong. I would have liked to see more from the Chargers, especially since this is Philip Rivers' contract year.
Yeah, and I think something that's been really interesting about the Chargers maybe the last 7 or 8 years is the fact that they've been a team that starts off really slow and then picks things up after around week 9. They've been doing that almost like to a T every single year up until either last year or this year, where this year they started out really hot and then they fizzled down. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that plays into the point that you were making in terms of they don't have that nasty playmaker. They had a regression from everybody across the board, I think, especially Keenan Allen, who I'm sure they were counting on for a large chunk of production.
Oh yeah,
out of the wide receiver spot and special teams, and then Antonio Gates can't keep doing it every single week. The running back game was Russian roulette; you didn't know what you were gonna get. And I can agree with that to some aspect, and I just don't know what they'll need to do to come out of that either in the I don't see them making the wild card or like even getting the wild card. I think it'll be really tough for them to have a chance at the playoffs this coming mm-hmm. season, and I don't know what that'll do for their prospects of keeping Phillip Rivers.
They did get a great pick in the second round with Denzel Perryman, who's going to be like a Zach Thomas. I don't know if you remember Zach Thomas from the Dolphins several years back. He'll be just a guy who racks up tackles. That's all he'll do. Their defense will be in a kind of new state where they're going to get more people. You know, Dwight Freeney is no longer there. So they're kind of casting out their old guys. So, yeah, the Chargers are very much in flux. But I feel like the AFC as a whole is kind of in an influx. There's no one who I feel like got exponentially better. I think the Dolphins maybe made the biggest leap by signing Sue. But, as far as competitive balance in the AFC goes, you don't know who's going to come out of the AFC North. It's always a gamble. It's always a jumble of who's going, because you have three competitive teams there. You have the AFC West, which is super competitive.
Yeah.
You have the AFC South, which is the Colts are leading the pack, but the Texans are almost there. You wonder what Brian Hoyer is going to do.
The
AFC East. I mean, you know, this year I think it's a weird thing in the AFC how everything's kind of shifted and players have really gone to different places. So yeah, I think the Chargers are out too, but. You never know what's going to happen next.
With that said, we talked about a couple of rookies that have been drafted, a couple of situations, a couple of spots. Let's spend the next couple of minutes just shifting to draft. Mm-hmm. The mindset you have that you go into, the strategy you use, players you key in on, skill sets you key in on, and like how you parse out, you know, the first couple of rounds compared to the middle rounds compared to, like, you know, 13 through 15. So how do you attack a draft, Joe Simone?
Yeah, well, you know, the biggest thing for me is I go back and, first of all, watching a lot of the college football games, you can kind of start to see glimpses of either brilliance or incompetence. I remember watching, I looked at Mario Cooper pick this year, and I go, who was the last guy to really be drafted early in the first round to be really dominant and as a receiver? And last year, Sammy Watkins was number four as well. And we'll see where he goes. You never know. He had one really good year, but before that, it was Calvin Johnson. It was the last really good pick up in the upper tier of the draft. And I remember watching Calvin Johnson when he it wasn't his last year. It must have been his. I can't remember if he left as a junior or senior or what he did. But it was like a sophomore year. I remember watching a game when we were in high school, and I remember seeing him like, oh my God, this guy is friggin' dominant. Like, he's absolutely insane, and he's playing on Georgia Tech. How is he playing on Georgia Tech?
Dude, I didn't even know that Demaryius Thomas went to Georgia Tech either. I thought he went to some flashier school or like LSU or Florida. Yeah, no, he went to Georgia freaking Tech.
It's insane watching some of these guys play for teams, and you kind of question the level of competition they played against. And that's kind of how a lot of scouts work, is that they look at, you know, they look at kind of the foolish things, which are combine numbers. Well, we've seen that with several big busts. Mike Mamula from the Eagles, who was in 96, I believe, amazing stats. He basically had a trainer train him for all the specific drills he was going to be going into in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And he killed it. But he had no business being in the NFL. He's a great, great pass rusher, couldn't defend the run to save his life. So it's a lot of these guys come in and they killed in the combine. You know, Kevin White turned the burners on. Kevin White has difficulty getting off the line appropriately. So when you see guys like Amari Cooper just dominate and do all the small things, and you really watch the game as it goes along, and, you know, I don't have a ton of sophisticated equipment to go back and replay all the time. I do watch a lot of previous game film, and you kind of see just what I've learned through all my film sessions playing football myself.
Mm-hmm.
Watch other commentators break it down. It's very simple to see which guys have it and which guys don't. And as far as those skills that we're talking about, as far as how it translates to the NFL, you never really know, because everything comes into play there. You have to. It's the ultimate team game, so you have to rely on your team. You have to rely on your organization. You have to see what actually comes with it. And, you know, that's kind of – I basically just watch games. I watch film off of what I have known and what I've seen, what I've talked about with many people before. And you know, it's so much fun, because this is as a diehard Eagles fan, it's the opportunity to change your franchise's luck. And if you really pick the right player, you could have someone amazing on your team. You know, you could have that Ray Lewis who you know, doesn't get drafted in the first two picks, but he's considered top three defensive players all time. So you never know who you're going to get and what you're going to get from the situation.
Yeah, I would have to. I agree wholeheartedly. It's more or less how I feel when I'm watching basketball in the NBA draft. Like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I don't have that immense knowledge of the game of football. I'm ever learning every single year and picking up new things. I'm getting better at it, but I'm glad that I know people like you, like Brad, a couple of other friends that have played the game, know the nuances, can, you know, and everybody's patient about that kind of stuff. So that's like another really big key thing for all football fans, in reality, in fantasies, to have patience with a lot of these a lot of these players, especially the young ones, it's never comes easy, and it never comes simple. And at the end of the day, you either have it or you don't. And that's the big thing, is patience and just knowing what you're good at and sticking to it.
Yeah.
So,
and, you know, the thing is also is when you, as a football player, and one of the greatest teaching tools in football is that you have to know where everyone else is at and what everyone else is doing on the field while you're there. So even if I played offensive line and defensive line, I have to know what my linebackers are doing. I have to know what kind of coverage I'm supporting. So you kind of look for guys like, you know, Marcus Mariota, who has incredible knowledge of the game and knows, and he's able to quickly read the defense very fast. And it's kind of like, you know, getting back to this, scouts have been saying that how is he going to operate in a pro-style offense? How is he going to read defenses? Well, he makes a lot of changes up at the line of scrimmage. He changes protection. He changes play. I mean, that's the basis of the zone read. It's actually faster than some pro style. It's just the game is a little bit different when you go to the pros. So it's football is the ultimate game where it's all about team, and it's all about learning and kind of working together. So that's where you that's why I find it such a awesome experience, and why I find the draft to be a fun challenge to kind of break all these guys down.
Yeah, that's great. It's a great way to put it, and a great way to cap the discussion on the draft. Now, focusing on to fantasy football, what's the perfect team for you? Like, how do you attack a fantasy football draft to build the team that you feel is going to dominate? What factors do you look for? What kind of skill? What player skills do you look for? How much of it deals with the schedule, prior years, all that stuff, like pedigree and everything? Like, what goes into building a Joe Simone fantasy football team?
My two biggest things are going to be health, previous health, making sure that you had a guy who hasn't set out a substantial amount of games, or, you know, disciplinary action, I should say, off the field, making sure that they're, you know, not going to be jeopardized mid-season and really screw you. And then schedule. Schedule is my biggest thing, because even if you're going to trade players and get rid of players throughout the season, that number one pick and that number two and that number three and number four, those guys that are your core of your team, you really want to make sure that they're not missing the same weeks. Like, that is the biggest thing to me. Like, that can really screw you. I know that our friend Drew Pianovi, who's a diehard Niners fan, drafted like 6 Niners last year. So he had a week where he basically came up with a loss, and that actually started his demise as top of the food chain. So you got to really, I'm big on schedule. I think it's super important. And then then it's all about scoring systems. Are your running backs going to be getting extra points? Are your wide receivers, your quarterbacks? What is the deal? How about defenses? Defenses are huge. Make sure you get a good defense who's actually going to drive some points up. And that has to do with the point system in your league. But schedule and health are my two biggest concerns.
Having said all that, talking about roster makeup and throughout the season, you know, using the waiver wire, ad drops, trades, how much of a focus do you put on trades? How much of a focus do you put on the waiver wire? How much of a focus do you put on making change to your lineup?
It's so hard, right? It's really difficult to make big decisions like that, so that it could ultimately make or break your season. I mean, last year I traded Macklin away. I can't even remember what I got for it. I was so ashamed. I know that the cornerstone of that deal, I can't remember who it was, but I also, Zach Stacy was thrown in. So just to say that it wasn't a very good trade. I got rid of Jordan Cameron, who was on the IR, but the draft did not go in my favor, to say the least. I think it was Reggie Wayne. I think I traded for Reggie Wayne early in the season, which didn't pan out. Reggie Wayne is normally a super reliable guy who just catches balls, but T.Y. Hilton came on strong, and that ultimately killed his career. So, yeah, like literally just destroyed his career.
Yeah.
But as you know, waiver wire is really important. It's really hard, but you know, you got to be careful with it because you might pick up that guy who's that flash in the pan, Jonas Gray type of player who you might pick up, start the next week, and might burn you. So you got to be careful with that. You got to be hesitant, especially with a lot of trades. You got to be very careful with who you're trading and really look at their value long term. And really look at the other guys and say, not just say how talented are they now, but how talented are they going to be down the season? I thought that Macklin would not get as many balls as he ultimately did. I didn't think he was going to be. I've never been a big Jeremy Macklin fan, honestly, as an Eagles fan. Never mm-hmm. been a big Jeremy Macklin fan. I didn't think he had. He first of all wasn't very healthy for a while.
And hamstrings. Then, he had spaghetti hamstrings, man.
Yeah,
you could feed an entire county in Italy with his hamstrings. That's how spaghetti like they were.
My people, I mean Philadelphia, they got plenty of Italians there, so we can we can feed all of that all of southern New Jersey as well. So Deshaun Jackson left, and you look at Macklin and you go, yeah, he's going to have high production, but is he really going to be that guy? And I didn't think it was going to happen. I think that he's going to get, you know, hurt in the middle of the season. I thought they're going to go to a newer receiver, maybe Josh Huff, because of how much Chip Kelly loves him. But you gotta make that decision, and it's tough. You just look at I'm big on looking at that schedule and how down the line it's gonna really affect your team.
As we come to a close, I want to focus on the rookie wide receiver class of 2014, and the question I pose to you is: out of those rookies that killed it, Odell Beckham Jr., Kelvin Benjamin, Jordan Matthews, Sammy Watkins, there are Mike Evans. I know there are a couple more that I'm missing. Devontae Adams, I believe that's his name. The guy for the Packers? Devontae Adams,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
Where do you see that rookie class going in the draft, in fantasy football drafts this season? Like, how big of a shakeup will that cause in upcoming drafts?
Yeah, I think they'll all be taken very early. It's weird to, I mean, it's really weird how each of those teams went into the draft mentally. I think Mike Evans is at the top of that list because Winston is actually the best probably passer to complement any of those receivers you just named.
Mm-hmm.
Eli Manning, great quarterback. In postseason, not the greatest in regular season.
Eli Manning he's an enigma in and of himself in the regular season because you don't know what you're going to get with him. You can get him, he can throw you for 405 touchdowns 1 week, and then he'll throw one touchdown, six interceptions, and you'll somehow still be in the game, but you'll lose.
Yeah, he's the weirdest, he's so strange in the way he can do that to you and your job. I feel bad, as much as I don't like the New York Giants, I feel bad for their fans because he actually probably has caused so many heart attacks and just killed so many great New York people from his erratic play that it's mind-boggling. But if Victor Cruz is healthy next year, I think that will it'll take some of the production away from Beckham Jr. Because you can't keep throwing him to him like you did at the end of the season, which were like absurd
22 targets or something like that.
Yeah, there's way too many looks. Defenses are going to be much better this year. I know that the Eagles definitely revamped their secondary. It's not 100% guaranteed to see where they're at. Cowboys much better overall in defense. They drafted Byron Jones, who is an absolute talent, who could probably do a serviceable job guarding Beckham Jr. I don't think he's going to get off as easy as he did last year. Kelvin Benjamin, I really like him a lot as far as his size, his measurables. His hands are very shaky at times, and I don't think that Panthers did enough in the draft to really help Cam Newton get to not get hit. We'll just say that there's going to be a lot of sacks coming on Cam Newton.
What's the percentage of hits that are going to be the line's fault and Cam Newton's fault, though? Because Cam can hold the ball a little bit too long.
But the thing is, Cam Newton has done a really good job as coming from, quarterbacking where he will run with the ball. I mean, he's not Dante Culpepper anymore, like a young Dante Culpepper. He's a guy who's actually going to stay in the pocket and try to get his reads done, but he hasn't really had the opportunity. And the thing is, it's really embarrassing because he's not facing defenses that are that threatening. He's facing the Saints, who give up a ton of points and a ton of Saints. Yards. Yeah, he's given up the Saints twice last year. I mean, that conference is very, or that division is very piss poor. So, yeah, they got Devin Funchess in the second round. That's probably going to help them out a lot. But, you know, with Greg Olsen already being there, and they have some serviceable guys. But offensively on the line, it doesn't help Cam Newton. So, therefore, it doesn't help Kelvin Benjamin.
Dang.
And then you look at Buffalo doesn't know what Buffalo's doing. They really don't. They don't have a first-round pick because of Sammy Watkins last year. So,
right.
Sammy Watkins, yeah.
Watkins basically is their first-round pick this year too.
Yeah, so he's got a lot of expectations. He better be worth it. I mean, that's why I kind of said, you know, earlier that Cooper is the best prospect since Calvin Johnson. Because, Sammy Watkins, he kind of cost them a lot. But, yeah, I don't think Buffalo's draft is being panned by pretty much everybody because they didn't really know what Buffalo's after. Mm-hmm. They're in limbo. They're in a weird limbo, and they're probably going to be drafting number one next year. So we'll see where that leads. But those guys, I think Jordan Matthews, big possession receiver, guy who is probably going to be relied on alongside Nelson Aguilar, but the way that Kelly likes to spread that ball out in that running game, now it's a crowded backfield because you have Murray.
Yeah, Murray, you have Matthews, you have Polk still, I believe.
Yeah, Polk actually left.
Oh.
But, he got a restricted free agent sign.
Oh.
I can't remember where, but you still have Sproles, though. You have Sproles in the back. So you have all these paths. You have a great running back, leading rusher from last year, but you also have an incredibly, gifted pass catcher coming out of the backfield who they'll probably move in the slot. Aguilar is probably going to take a lot of the
outside spots
routes. Oh, yeah, those streaks. We'll see what they do with him. He's going to be having a lot of time on special teams as well, most likely, I think. Jordan Matthews, it's going to be weird to see where he really fits in there. Devontae Adams, probably not going to get much next year. And a Cobb signing back. Jordy Nelson coming back. They look pretty stacked again for this year. So it's really hard to say what is going to be going for him, but I think Mike Evans is probably the head of the pack there. Jameis Winston is a solid quarterback, has everything that you want in a prototypical NFL quarterback, but his issues off the field, obviously, but I think he'll be in good hands with Lovie Smith, and that means good things for Mike Evans.
Right, and with that, as we're wrapping up here, on the inaugural Trust the Gut Fantasy Football /Football Podcast.
Yeah, baby.
You've got the number one pick in the fantasy football draft, Joe Simone. Who are you taking in a standard league? Who are you taking in a PPR league? And why?
Oh, we take Wes Welker in every single one of those.
Yes.
Got so many concussions. Yeah, that's really tough. So much shakeup going on. It's hard to even put my nose on it. Let's see. Who would I pick?
Well, here's a good thing. You got a standard league, which doesn't include points per reception. Like, we're just going to run down a standard league where you get a point for every 10 yards rush, a point for every 10 yards caught. Passing points are 4 for a touchdown. 1 point for every 25 yards. Interceptions are minus two. Fumbles are minus two. Rushing and receiving touchdowns are six. Who you're not going to take a defense number one, but...
Yeah, my number one guy to me who's been so good in, like, last 2 years, Antonio Brown. Now, that guy is a fantastic wide receiver who usually gets picked up in second or third rounds. But, God, that guy just – he gets every single thing that Ben Roethlisberger throws at him. And those are and he catches some really tough balls. So, he's a really good player, PPR league. Man, who else would I pick? I mean, Calvin Johnson's shaky every year. I mean, I really like where – I think the NFL's headed towards more passing, even more this year.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to say who's going to be the number – and how about LeSean McCoy in Buffalo? I think Rex Ryan's going to ride him as far as he can.
Yeah, that comes with – that's a gift and a curse. So you don't want – I don't – how long are those wheels going to hold up? I think if I'm looking at a PPR league, I don't know what is what he's doing off the field or how he's doing with his DUI charge, but Le'Veon Bell is probably my number one pick in a PPR, just because
both Steelers for us.
He can do anything.
Yeah,
I mean Kyle had him last year. I tried to pry him away from Kyle. Right before he just blew up, and Kyle stiff-armed me pretty hard on that, and I can see why. And he can do whatever you want. With a standard league, I don't know that one's a little hard, but I might have to probably say Le'Veon Bell too. I like his usage rate is so high, and the ceiling for what he can do, as long as he stays healthy. It's as up there as I can remember with like guys like Adrian Peterson or a super healthy Jamaal Charles or Calvin Johnson being healthy. Like a non-quarterback taking number one, he's got to be the guy that that I look at and I key in on for sure for next year. So. Yeah,
I mean, he's the one thing is that when they trade a LeGarrette Blount, I don't know. The one thing is I love Le'Veon Bell, too. I had him 2 years ago when he was out for the first three or four games.
Three games because of the LaFrance sprain in his foot, right?
Yeah, and he came on and he did really well. And we'll see where the Steelers are at as far as depth-wise and how they really handle that. I think that they're a good favorite to come out of that AFC North strong and really challenge for a playoff spot and for divisional crown and maybe the Super Bowl next year. But it's kind of like for me with him, it's all about depth. And they lost Blount and how much of a beating is he going to take? And obviously he can catch. He's fantastic. So, but I like that pick. I like Antonio Brown. I do like the Steelers a lot next year.
Yeah, the Steelers. Steelers are an interesting team, mostly because they used to be a lot. They used to just be run you over and then defend, and then all of a sudden Roethlisberger was like, oh, I can throw too. And he's got weapons in Brown. Heath Miller keeps trucking around, even though he looks like he's 40, but he's not really 40. He's like, I think he's about to be 30. He looks super old for how old he is. And they also got Martavius Bryant and what's that guy that's from U of OSU? Why can't I think of his name right now? Marcus Wheaton. They've got some weapons, and Ben Roethlisberger did a fantastic job last year of utilizing every single one of them to the fullest extent. So, with that, we're just going to call it a wrap on today's Trust the Gut podcast. For Clem and Uduk, I got Joe Simone on the other end. We'll keep you abreast of any information that comes, and just look out for another podcast in the coming time. So, Joe, you got any last words before we sign off?
Hey, just if anybody's out there listening, you can follow me on Twitter at Big Joe Knows, all one word.
And that's KNOWS, as Big Joe knows.
I specify that, yeah.
Because he doesn't have a big nose, but he's always in the big know. So
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
There's all that. So, Clement and Joe, we'll catch you later, people. Peace.